This is News in Notes. I'm Tony Cox in for Farai today. On today's roundtable, a busy week on Capitol Hill, new unemployment figures and the president's new budget shape one debate, while competing resolutions on the Iraq war shape another. And Black History Month, it's here, and it's everything from celebrating the past to selling coke. To talk about these topics, we are joined now by panelist Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and Hip-Hop Culture, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco, Professor of Globalization and Education and Co-Director of Immigration Studies at New York University. Everybody, nice to have you with us today.
Good morning. Yeah.
Let's start with the budget first. President Bush is submitting his plan today to balance the nation's budget. It's a nearly $3 trillion package that calls for increases in military spending and broad cuts to entitlement programs, all, of course, designed to balance the budget within 5 years. Now, the release of the president's budget comes on the heels of the release of the latest unemployment numbers, which aren't good. 111,000 new jobs were created in January, and yet the nation's unemployment rate rose to 4.6%, according to the Labor Department. And for Black folks, the news is actually better. Believe it or not, the jobless rate fell to 8%, its lowest mark in 5 years, still higher than the national average, of course. For whites and Latinos, the rate edged up to 4.1%, which is the highest in 5 months, and 5.7% for Latinos, which is the highest in a year. A lot of numbers, but what it boils down to, Mike Myers, is this. The economy doesn't seem to be the rosy picture that the president painted for us during the State of the Union address, does it?
It has only been a few weeks. I cannot believe this president. I cannot believe his national economic advisors any more than I can believe his national intelligence, security, and military advisors. Broad cuts to entitlement programs. My question is, which entitlement programs? Halliburton? Of course not. We're talking about slashing more aid to the poor and the powerless and the low-income and middle-income people. If I were in the Congress, either in the Senate or the House, I would find the line. I believe it is the line of $5.6 billion designated for the increase in the troops in Iraq. I take that $5.6 billion and I take a pen, not a pencil, and cross that line out. Hey, how about that as a start to balancing the budget? This president has been too late, and he's cutting too much against the poor and the powerless.
Well, we know how Robert George feels about it, Yvonne Bino. I think he was crystally clear. How do you see it?
Well, I tend to agree with
Michael Myers.
I know Michael Myers.
Oh, did I say Robert George? My apologies to you.
Don't confuse me with Robert
George. We know how Robert feels also.
Right, even though he's not here. We know how Robert feels.
Well, I think definitely what I kind of echo a lot of the sentiments. First of all, we're talking about these job increases, but I always question what kind of jobs are being created. Are we talking about jobs with real wages, benefits, and the like? Or are we talking about these kind of McJobs that have no benefits and you're probably only working part-time hours, if at best? So when you're looking at the statistics for Black people, certainly we've reduced somewhat, but 8% unemployment is still a lot of people who are without jobs. On top of this entitlement, I would echo, well, where are these cuts going to come from? We're talking about this escalation of the $5.6 billion, with a B, billion dollars, and we don't see even an end game to how much money is going to be poured into that endeavor, where we do have needs here, everything from health care on down to affordable housing. So I think this is a bunch of cloak and dagger, smoke and mirrors, rather, that they keep saying, oh, everything is getting better, everything is getting better, but I think for the question is for whom. I think there is a small part of the citizenry which is doing well. These are the people at the highest tier salary-wise, but I think for middle-class people, they're certainly losing ground, and for the poor, the ground has been pulled from underneath them a long time ago.
Well, Marcella, we do this financial dance every year with the budget, and there is a finite pool of money from which to draw. Something has to give. Is the president not between a rock and a hard place, given the monies that are already earmarked for Iraq?
Did you say between Iraq and a hard place?
He's between Iraq and a hard place, that's for sure.
Boy, Mike Myers, you are on it today. He is really on it. That's clever. What do you say, Marcelo?
Well, in a way,
we are witnessing the sequela, the consequences of this massive, unprecedented investment in the Iraq debacle. So looking at the numbers, you need to frame the numbers in the context of the skyrocketing costs of healthcare that have a tremendous burden, create a tremendous burden for working class families in our country. We have a stagnation of wages where, in terms of real dollars, the average worker continues to lose ground. We have an increasing problem of inequality. Last week, Exxon, the big oil companies, posted the largest gains in the history of the United States. So what we have is we have a picture where there are tremendous problems in the domains that are relevant to our working class citizens, to our middle class citizens, and a continuing investment in a war initiative that is proven to be a catastrophe in all levels. Yeah, very bad news.
If you're just joining us, I wanted to tell you that this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox, and we are talking about a number of things, the Iraq war and the new figures for unemployment, as well as the budget that is being presented to Congress by the president. Joining us on the roundtable today are Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and Hip-Hop Culture, Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education and co-director of immigration studies at NYU, and Michael Myers, not Robert George, but Michael Myers, thank executive you, director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. All of this conversation brings to mind for me, the three of you, the issue of Iraq, of course, and the competing resolutions that are on Capitol Hill this week, and whether or not, with regard to how Congress responds to the president's requests with regard to the budget, how that might impact any action that Congress will take with regard to these competing resolutions, whether or not, what kind of a message they want to send to the White House with regard to the war. So let me come to you, Yvonne. Which of these messages on the resolution do you think is likely to have the most traction at the end of the day?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to ask the question, what is the real purpose of these resolutions to begin with? Congress certainly has the ability to not take symbolic action, but to take real action if they are opposed to the escalation in Iraq. I think these resolutions are really just a way of covering themselves and trying to play the middle. They want to, on one hand, say, oh, Mr. President, we don't agree with this escalation. But on the other hand, they want to say, oh, but we support the troops, and therefore we're not going to do anything to erode confidence at the troop level. And I think it's a misnomer. I don't know that you can't say to the president, this is a bad policy and we're not going to get behind it any further. We do support the troops, but we're not going to give you any more money for this, and we want this thing to be shut down. So I'm not big on these resolutions. I just think they're a waste of time. I think if they really were interested in making some strong statement, they would actually get some legislation on the table that really address this problem. I think they're just ducking for cover with these resolutions. So whether one says this or one says that, I think they all have the same intention, which is really to do nothing. John Edwards said that yesterday. He believes that everybody's going to complain and complain and complain, and he believes the administration is listening to the complaints. But at the end of the day, they know that nothing really is going to be done, and they're going to go ahead with their policy as they had wanted to.
So Mike Myers, so a non-binding resolution has no value, do you think?
It has no value whatsoever, except for the Republican senators who will stand in the well with an eye on the 2008 elections. They will be able to say, I stood up and I voted against escalation, except they did not use the word escalation. I agree wholly with Yvonne in the sense of the idiocy of a non-binding resolution. If you have the power, and the Congress does, this is an equal branch of government, its responsibility is funding the government. Its responsibility is declaring war. It can undeclare war if it ever did declare war, and it can cut the funding so that the president of the United States, the so-called self-described commander-in-chief, I'm a wartime president, will not have the funds to implement what he is telling the nation he's going to do, regardless of public opinion, regardless of sentiment in the United States Congress. A non-binding resolution is just that. Sentimental nonsense.
Well, Marcello, it seems that it's unclear to me, and I know to some others, whether or not Congress, in fact, does have the power constitutionally to cut funding with regard to the troops that are there and the troops that the president wants to send in this surge.
Well, certainly there could be room for really testing the power and the limits of the congressional ability to approve funds, which would presumably include the funds that would be required for the escalation in Iraq. So it seems to me that rather than let's call it the theater of the symbolic politics that we're seeing now, that both Yvonne and Michael referred to, there could be a real test a substantive test of the limits of at least in the funding domain. Certainly, the president has the powers to declare how the military would proceed. There are issues of who can declare war. There are issues of how to fund. This, to me, is a little too late. 70% of the American people oppose the escalation in Iraq. And at the end of the day, probably the administration will proceed forward in its almost autistic state without paying any attention to either the popular opinion or any of these symbolic dances that the Senate is engaging in. I totally agree with Mike, as a function of what they see coming forward in the next election cycle. This is buying insurance.
So since everybody agrees, we might as well not talk about this any longer and move on to another topic. Maybe we'll get some disagreement there. It's Black History Month. Surprise, surprise. I know you all know that. And February usually brings all kinds of messages which attempt to evaluate Black culture, Black history, the past, and it ranges from things like Coca-Cola's commercials yesterday during the Super Bowl to all sorts of things. New York City is considering a symbolic resolution over the issue of the N-word. Let me come to you, Yvonne, first. Black History Month, has it evolved into something that it should not be now?
Well, I think that it certainly has, but I think that's par for the course in America. I think that if you can make something a commodity, we certainly do that. And I think Black History Month is no exception. I don't know about our other panelists, but frankly, I'm tired of Black History Month. Not from the standpoint that we shouldn't be talking about Black history as well as Latino history, Asian history, whatever, but this whole idea that we have 1 month a year, one discrete part of the year to have this dialogue, I think it continues to spell how marginalized non-white people in this country are. We don't have White History Month because every month is White History Month. So I think as long as we're going to keep having these 1 month for this group, 1 month for that group, we're going to continue to have these kind of nonsensical conversations about, well, whether Coca-Cola should be involved or whether the RNC should make a commercial or whatever have you. I think there's room for us to be part of the dialogue 12 months out of the year. In terms of the N-word, I have to disagree, Tony. I think that's a different thing. Leroy Comrie wanted to introduce a resolution, of course, another non-binding one, but this one I could sign on to, where he's basically, you know, coming out and say, look, it's time to get rid of this word in the dialogue. And I have to commend Leroy Comrie on this one. I think it is time for us to have some real conversation about putting this word to rest. Certainly the entertainers have their own say on this and the comedians, but for the average people on the street, I have yet to see people who are jumping behind and say, yeah, we should be able to say the N-word in any context that we would like. So I think they're two different things.
Following up on what Yvonne just said, you know.
And we've got about 2 minutes for you to do that. Let me just, before you start, Mike, is this just coincidental that this is coming up during Black History Month?
Well, you know, if you believe that Black History Month is what Yvonne said, and you have the way people are talking about Black History Month and Black history, which is has always been nonsensical in the context of racial negritude, I think that N-word is not as a is not used particularly by youth as a disparaging term anymore. It's not used as an insult. It is part of the vocabulary. And you can't even talk to black youth only when you talk about the N-word, because white youths use the word, Hispanic youths use the word endearingly, not insultingly. And even when it is used in a disparaging, insulting way, the artists use it, the playwrights use it for satire, to express anger, to reflect history, to put things in context, to shock. You can't ban words. And you shouldn't ask a particular people, a racial group, to stop using a word. If you did, you're going to have other groups urging to stop using words that insult them.
But that's exactly what other groups do, Michael, and I'm not disagreeing to a certain extent, but that stuff has been marketed to black youth. We didn't start out, if you go back to hip-hop early on, we didn't have that word wasn't used. That has been, that envelope has been pushed and pushed, and that has been pushed by corporate entities, not necessarily the rap artists themselves. That's why it has become acceptable. It wasn't always acceptable. That wasn't always the case.
You and I can agree at least that, thank goodness, that Black History Month is the shortest month of the year.
That's a good place for us to stop. Unfortunately, Marcella, we have run out of time, so that I'm not going to be able to get your input on this one. But
I was going to disagree.
Well, yeah. Surely Black History Month will be around again in 2008, and we can visit that subject then. Joining us from New York is Mike Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and Hip-Hop Culture, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco, Professor of Globalization and Education and Co-Director of Immigration Studies. Everybody, happy Black History Month.
And to you.
Thank you.